Do you recognize that sound? It's the sound that gets you out of bed on a Saturday morning.
Yep, it's the sound of a frying egg. The staple ingredient for many brunch dishes is an egg, or two or three. Over easy, basted, poached, oven-baked. I'm Gina Kaufman. This is Central Standard, and it's time for our annual brunch show. Our food critics are here to share their favorite spots around town. But first, this show got us thinking about the crucial role of eggs in any brunch. So our intern, Andrea Tudhope, visited Room 39 to get an egg prep tutorial.
This is where it all begins in the kitchen at Room 39. Cracking open the eggs. There are dozens of ways to cook and serve eggs, and even more ways to pair them. Butter or olive oil, bacon or sausage, sourdough or rye.
With our egg scrambles, I like our brioche French toast, rye bread with an over easy egg kind of sandwich. With our poached egg, I really do enjoy the ciabatta.
That's sous chef Jamie Aragonez. She's running the line this morning, but typically a man named Joel runs the show for breakfast.
We call him the egg whisperer, and today is his day off. And he's the best egg cook. Howell's like a master at what he does. It sounds silly, but he makes the most beautiful over easy eggs. They never have any brown edges and they're always perfect.
According to Jamie, who, dare I even mention it, once upon a time did not like eggs, the perfect egg is as runny as possible.
You want to be able to poke the yolk and it just perfectly run.
Thank goodness she's come to her senses. Though it's hard to say which dish is most popular, today, Jamie's choice is Room 39's artichoke toast. It's two generous slices of fresh ciabatta, slathered with creamy, smooth artichoke spread, all topped with arugula, and, chef recommends, two poached eggs, or any style of your choice. Jamie drops the eggs in the warm water on the stove, containing a small amount of vinegar to help keep the eggs intact. And then, we wait.
You just have to be patient. Because if you flip it too early, the egg will burst, or it's just underdone, and if you forget about it, that's the worst, because then you just get an over-hard egg, and unless you want it that way, it's a bad thing.
Poaching seems to be a delicate process, and it's hard to imagine perfecting it during a morning rush. They serve breakfast and brunch all day on Saturdays at Room 39, and Jamie says it's busy all day.
We have a lot of egg snobs, which is good, because like I said, we have an egg whisperer, so he knows what he's doing. They're very spoiled.
And good eggs are what we all expect when we sit down to feast at our favorite spots on a Saturday morning. But a lot more goes into it than you might think.
Eggs are hard. I honestly think they're very difficult to cook. The actual making of the egg isn't necessarily difficult, it's just they require a lot of patience.
Jamie's explaining this while five pans of eggs, each a different style, are going at once. And suddenly...
Sorry.
Oil jumps out at me from one of the pans. It's dangerous and delicate territory in here. Eggs might be a traditional longtime staple of breakfast and brunch, but cooking them is quite the feat. When the dish is ready, Jamie joins me out in the comparatively peaceful restaurant, just before I break into the pillowy eggs at rest on the heap of spicy fresh arugula. I ask her the most important question of the day, the question on all of our minds.
Can you have brunch or breakfast without eggs?
Technically, yes, you can. I just think you shouldn't.
Jamie Aragonez at Room 39, schooling Andrea Tudhope in the art of the egg. So you shouldn't have brunch without eggs. Roger that. But when did the whole eggs in the morning tradition get started? Europeans feast on omelets for dinner. Is this an American thing? Food historian Andrea Broomfield is here to explain it. Welcome to Central Standard, Andrea.
Hi, nice to be here.
Nice to have you. When did eggs start finding their way onto American tables for that morning meal?
Well, I think that what you were just talking about with Room 39 is important, because eggs have had a place on the table regardless of what the meal is for centuries, all the way back to ancient times. And breakfast is kind of a new meal, if you think about it.
Breakfast is a new meal?
Yes. Well, I mean, relatively speaking, a new meal. But in
people didn't used to wake up and eat right away?
They did not. In medieval times and into the Renaissance, in the great country homes, people would have two meals a day. Their main meal was dinner, and it usually happened around 10 o'clock in the morning. And sometimes it would happen as late as noon. And then you would follow that late afternoon and early evening with the meal that we call supper, the last meal that you eat before you go to bed. So breakfast as a distinguished meal that has a certain kind of menu doesn't really come into full force, at least in England or the UK, until around the time of industrialization. And the needs of the worker begins to create the need to have something really substantial before you go to work. And that's because lunch is an even more recent development than would be breakfast. And you had to get through the day in order to then come home and sit down to a substantial meal at night.
So it's almost like we started with brunch and then it split off. And then someone had the ingenious idea of, wait a minute, bring that thing back on the weekends when you don't need to go to work, take a break, eat.
That's right. And in fact, brunch, the actual creation of that word, we think is an English creation that happened in the 1890s when a gentleman who was writing for a hunting quarterly, a magazine that was geared towards gentlemen hunters, was trying to make the case that what had been the hunting breakfast, which happened after an early morning hunt during the hunting season, might have a place on the table all year round, not just after a hunt. And he created that term brunch that then very, very quickly made its way across the Atlantic over to the United States. So the 1890s is a pretty important decade in terms of us thinking about a really late breakfast, what we had used to call second breakfast, that then becomes brunch after this gentleman wrote about it in the Hunting Quarterly.
But eggs are crucial to both breakfast and brunch. And that interests me because it's sort of a casual observation that in the rest of the world, outside of our continent, It seems like dishes starring eggs appear all over the menu, all over throughout the day at dinner, You know, anytime. And it's a very morning thing here in the United States. When did that happen?
I think that if you think about why people would eat out, it was oftentimes because they were traveling. It wasn't like, hey, let's wake up and go out and eat breakfast. You had to find food, whether you were crossing a body of water or on a train or by stagecoach. So the egg begins to show up on breakfast menus that are aimed at travelers. One of the kind of funny stories would be if you look at the beginning of transatlantic steamships. The Cunard line was a British line. And
when are we talking about?
This would be about 1830. And the Cunard line would have a breakfast bill of fare, and after a huge slew of chops and grilled meat, there would be two egg choices. One was egg and omelet, and one was egg boiled. And the Cunard line was notorious for bad food, and people would sit down for breakfast, and they would want eggs, and they would run out. So a competing line, the American Collins line, would offer its passengers fabulous breakfast, and eggs got top billing on their menu. Eggs with ham, eggs with bacon, eggs poached, eggs boiled, and also eggs fried to sort of one-up Cunard. You see that kind of bill of fare, as menus were called at that time, pop up in the early 1830s and 1840s on hotel restaurant menus as well. And again, I mean, the egg was on all menus all the time. A la carte menus or the table d'hôte, the meal of the day. And it becomes important for breakfast probably because it was important for other meals too. It's such an efficient, cheap protein source, and it's so incredibly easy to mass produce eggs. So they're popular or were popular in the United States for other meals besides breakfast as well.
It's not that we don't see them on menus in other places, but when did they really start to become so closely associated with one another?
The egg associated with breakfast?
Yeah.
Again, I think it has to do with the fact that people would be staying at a hotel and they would wake up in the morning and they would request eggs. And because eggs were always popular, they just simply became a part of all breakfast menus from the get-go. The earliest menus that I've looked at that come from restaurants, which would be the 1830s and 1840s, always list eggs for the breakfast part. But they also would appear on the a la carte menu for dinner as well, because the idea was is that people wanted them at any time of the day. In terms of why Americans today associate eggs mainly with breakfast, I just think it's because lunch interferes and lunch says, hey, you have to have sandwiches for lunch. And so you begin to differentiate between what's appropriate for breakfast, eggs, bacon, toast, for example, what's appropriate for lunch, a sandwich, a salad, what's appropriate for dinner, meat, potatoes, vegetable, and tastes are they sort of become calcified in those ways.
There are different kinds of sort of cultural threads all running through the early American settler days all at once.
Right.
There's like a Puritan ethos, and then
yes.
There's like the Wild West ethos. Do those reflect different breakfasting tendencies?
Yes, they do. Probably a lot of readers are. Our listeners are familiar with Kellogg and the importance in the United States of eating nutritional food and having a health-conscious diet. And the Kellogg kind of breakfast approach was that you should be heavy with the grains, with the whole grains, rye and oats and corn, for example, and that eggs were actually somewhat suspect because they were considered a decadent food of ancient times. Like the Romans were chastised by not just the Puritans, but by Catholics for being way over the top when it came to gluttony. So you have that strain in Puritan approaches to breakfast where eggs are associated with a meat and possibly can be dangerous for the health. On the other hand, when you have the beginning of the gold rush and lots of pioneers traveling, the egg becomes sort of a very, very precious part of a morning meal, particularly if it could be fried up with peppers and chilies and tomatoes and sandwiched between sourdough. And so our love of the Denver omelet, for example, comes from that particular pioneer tradition.
Wow.
Yeah.
So does the Denver omelet actually have a connection to Denver?
It does. It used to be a Southwestern specialty, but when the Transcontinental Railroad connects all of the continent, then ideas about food begin to travel very quickly. And what had been a Southwestern egg dish or omelet then was coined the Denver omelet, probably because people were coming in droves through that particular train station, and they associated that style of egg with Denver.
When did scrambled eggs enter the picture?
Scrambled eggs were probably a part of the picture way, way back, but they had different names depending on where you were from. And the most common word for scrambled eggs up into the early 20th century would have been buttered eggs, because the idea was that you would take the eggs and you would break them and you would vigorously shake them in hot butter. And so they would have the kind of curdy texture that we associate with scrambled eggs, but they would also be heavy with the butter.
There's an egg shortage right now as a result of avian flu, which obviously you can still get
right.
Eggs. That's no problem, but it's driven up the cost of eggs. Has America seen this kind of shortage at any point in the past, an egg shortage?
The most important shortage to talk about would be during World War II, when eggs were rationed and the dreaded egg powder began to appear as a substitute for fresh eggs. And if you look through cookbooks of that time period, the number of recipes for eggless cakes or one egg cake would have been a result of that. But I think that Americans really took eggs for granted. Again, they're relatively inexpensive. They become so commonplace, you don't even really think about them until suddenly you can't have your bacon and eggs in the morning. And by the 1940s, that's the way a lot of Americans were starting their day, would be with eggs and some kind of cured meat, typically bacon, sausage, or ham. And so the shortage was felt, and it wasn't just felt in the fact that you couldn't do quite as much baking, but you also were missing an important breakfast staple.
You've written a book on the history of food here in Kansas City. It'll be coming out this winter, but as long as we've got you here now on Central Standard's Brunch Day, any historic KC brunch spots worth noting?
Well, you could go lowbrow, you could go highbrow, or you could go middlebrow. And brunch is oftentimes associated with people that I would consider to be hipsters, people who are really searching for the hottest place where they can find the best brunch food. And
has that always been true?
Well, brunch itself is really born of the wealthy classes. Again, we go back to the hunters, the gentlemen hunters, and their hunting breakfasts. And so you can see that there would always be kind of an association with a late morning decadence. But in terms of Kansas City brunch places, I think the one place that really stands out for me is just incredibly over the top. And that's the way I consider brunch to be. It's a meal where nothing is impossible with brunch because it doesn't fit into those really neat dimensions of breakfast has to be eggs, bacon, and toast, and lunch has to be sandwiches. So you can do whatever you want. And there was this place that was really popular on the plaza called Annie Santa Fe. It was a Gilbert Robinson concept restaurant.
When is this?
This would be in the 70s. And it was hugely popular. In fact, people would wait up to 3 hours to get a seat at Annie Santa Fe, and sometimes they would go see a movie while they were waiting.
Wow.
And
just put your name in, go see a movie, and come back?
That's right. It was that popular. And they had on their menu this dish, and I'm going to try to read it for you. It's just crazy. It was called a chimichanga Florentine con huevo hollandaises. Okay, so this was, first of all, their brunch menu was heavy on egg dishes. Almost everything was egg-focused on that menu. But this was where they would take spinach and they would deep fry it in a extra large flour tortilla.
Way to counteract the spinach factor there.
Oh, and then don't forget the cheese. And then you would top this thing with what was called a ranchero sauce, which I don't know. I wasn't around for this when I was too young to go, but I would assume that would be kind of like a salsa. But then it was topped with poached eggs, and on top of the poached eggs, there would be more cheese, and then it was topped with hollandaise. And of course, it would have been served with rice and beans and margaritas, which were served by the pitcherful at Annie Santa Fe. So that's one of the places it was sort of, it was popular. It could bring in people from not just very wealthy people, but middle-class people as well, and it became a trend.
Is there anything special about how this midday weekend meal evolved here in town, like a Kansas City claim to fame or idiosyncratic brunch tradition?
Well, I like to go back to the time of the Pendergast era. Okay, so when jazz reigned supreme in Kansas City, and there was a special kind of tradition called the spook breakfast. And spook had to do with the people who stayed up late. The spooks came out at night. And these were very underground kind of jazz concerts that allowed black and white musicians to co-mingle. And they would get together after they had finished their night gigs around 3, 4 a.m., and they would convene at a place that only they knew about or that people that were really tuned into the jazz culture knew about. And it would start with a breakfast. Breakfast would be whatever was available and cheap, and it was simply there to get people refueled to start these jazz sessions that would then continue from about 4 a.m. until noon. So
wow.
People would eat chili, crawdads, hot dogs, and eggs.
Andrea Broomfield, culinary historian and English professor at Johnson County Community College, thanks so much. We'll have to talk again when your book comes out.
I'd love to. Thank you.
When Central Standard returns, the food critics will be here. Call now to tell us about your favorite brunch, what you order, why it's awesome. 816-235-2888. We're back. I'm Gina Kaufman, and it's food critics time. Specifically, brunch, a meal that confirms weekend status. Charles Ferruza of The Pitch, good morning.
Good morning, Gina.
Emily Ferris, our pal from Feed Me Creative, thanks for joining us
today.
Thank
you.
And Mary Block, who blogs around food at Around the Block. Welcome back to the show.
Hi, Gina.
Call 816-235-2888 with your favorite Kansas City area brunches. The item you like to order, the thing you want to eat for brunch and just can't seem to find here in town is also an acceptable thing to call about. The number again is 816-235-2888. Critics, what's everyone in the room's personal brunch philosophy? Is this a room full of brunchers?
I used to like brunch a lot. I'm less so anymore because I feel the obligation to eat more than I probably should. But my theory about brunch is that there have to be an equal there has to be an equal number of breakfast and lunch dishes, and there has to be a dessert component.
These are the rules.
These are the Firouza rules.
Okay.
My rules, Charles, are similar, except there also has to be booze.
Yeah, well, I understand that too.
Yes. That was dessert. if there's no booze option, it's not brunch. It's breakfast.
I agree with you about that.
Yeah. Why is booze so important to brunch? If you're eating a breakfast-lunch hybrid at 11 a.m. and there's no booze, what are you doing?
Honestly, if I'm eating brunch at 11 a.m. or noon or 1, other than right now because I am with child, I am usually hungover. And I want a little hair of the dog, a mimosa, a Bloody Mary, something to kind of get me back into the real world when I'm eating my Sunday morning breakfast and lunch combination.
And Emily, are you a brunch enthusiast?
I am a brunch enthusiast. I love brunch. Part of it is because I'm not a morning person. And so on the weekends, I want to sleep in, take my time. You don't even need to get ready for brunch, though. I think there's kind of a brunch scene, which can be very annoying, but, you know, bedhead and sloppy clothes, but you meet up with your friends whenever everybody rolls out of bed and gets around to it, and you order a bunch of food you don't need and get some mimosas and Bloody Marys and coffee. And one thing I've always been amused by when I have brunch is the just sheer amount of drinks I have in front of me. So there's water and coffee and a mimosa or a Bloody Mary and usually some sort of juice. And so, you know, 3 or 4 or 5 drinks at one time.
Just get it all taken care of all at once.
You need to hydrate.
Mary, your brunch philosophy?
I love brunch. I think it's gotten to be more of a thing than it used to be. And I also think it's more for people either before they have kids or when they're empty nesters, because when my kids were growing up, that was just not something we had time for. But I agree with Charles. It's got to have an equal part breakfast and lunch.
Let's go ahead and get some recommendations. Emily, tell me about Voltaire.
I really like Voltaire's brunch. Voltaire is in the West Bottoms on Genesee Street, and they really excel at small plates there. And so their menu changes pretty frequently, and they just started doing brunch, what, Charles, about a year ago?
I would say so, yeah.
You wrote about it when they did. And their dishes are definitely, while they have some breakfasty dishes. I know we had a really, last time I was there about a month ago, they had these amazing malted waffles. But they also have, sometimes they have ramen, sometimes they have pozole. They have probably 20 different small plates to choose from. And they're all, none of them fit into any one cuisine. And they're all very inventive. And they're kind of made for sharing, which is a really fun part of brunch, I think.
Is there, with all these different types of cuisines and all these different dishes, is there like a real strength that comes through in all of these brunch dishes that you could put your finger on?
They're just all really flavorful. Everything I've had there has been really flavorful. And I think that's when I, on a normal Sunday morning, if I'm feeling a little beat up from Saturday night, I want something greasy or spicy or salty or really, really flavorful, not just eggs and toast. That's a boring breakfast that you could have any day of the week.
So that's Voltaire in the West Bottoms.
Yes.
Gina, I wanted to kind of hop on something both Mary and Emily have said. Brunch is traditionally a grown-up meal. You know, it's not a good place to take children. For one thing, they're too fussy, and no one wants to hear a screaming child at, you know, even 10 o'clock in the morning. Brunch is a grown-up meal for grown-ups, and Voltaire is a truly grown-up brunch.
Yeah,
it's for people who want to be away from children and not near them.
And they have a great cocktail list that's also available during brunch, so you can get they're not always even breakfasty cocktails, but you can get a tequila cocktail for brunch.
And I think what sets their dishes apart is that each one of them is creative. It's not just a typical egg dish.
No standard fare.
Right.
Mary, talk to me about Port Fonda's brunch. You're fond of that one, and you're not alone. That one got a couple of nominations from this panel.
I love Port Fonda for any meal, but I particularly like brunch. Number one, they play different music, and it's a little bit quieter than at night. But they also have, they always have chilaquiles, which I have to get whenever I go there.
Explain what that is.
It's layered tortilla chips. Or tortillas with they're crunchy, but then they've been soaked in a chili verde sauce and topped with an egg. And I think they do it better than anybody in town. And then they also have a chili relleno of the day, and it's always really interesting. And I'm not a fried food person, but these are so lightly coated that I love them. And they do the same thing with a chimichanga.
So this is at Port Fonda.
Yep.
And I have to point out clearly as the resident drink person this morning, Port Fonda does a Bloody Maria bar, which is like a Bloody Mary bar. So you can order your Bloody Maria and you get a shot of vodka and a pint glass. And then you go up to the counter and you mix whatever you want into your. And I think there's even like chicharrones and all kinds of fun, weird things to
not your typical fixings.
No.
We've talked about brunch being kind of a scene. Is there a way you'd describe the brunch scene at Port Fonda?
Similar to the scene the rest of the time at Port Fonda. Yeah. Lots of hipsters and young people.
Emily, tell me about Louis' Wine Dive.
So Louis' Wine Dive in Waldo. I'm just going to sound like a real drunk on this episode because I can't honestly remember the food because it's been a while since I've been to brunch there. But I really like that they have bottomless mimosas. You can order a bottle. You pay, I don't know, $6 or $7 or $8. And they have a peach mimosa and a grapefruit mimosa and an orange mimosa. So you get brunch and drink as many mimosas as you want.
It seems fair that that's what you remember, considering it's called a wine dive.
Exactly. Thank you, Gina.
And Charles, how about Westport Cafe and Bar? Everyone here included it on their list. I want to hear your review.
Well, it's a perfect example of a grown-up brunch. It's very, I won't say it's quiet, but it's not noisy. It's very laid back. It's very comfortable. You can kind of, well, for one thing, the owner, Aaron Confessori, understands that a brunch needs to be breakfast and lunch dishes. You know, you take what you want. Because it's a menu brunch. And, you know, if you've had a horrible week, as I usually do.
That was so Eeyore.
That's my middle name, you know.
Charles E. Ferruzzi.
Yes, E. If you've had a bad week, it's a great place to kind of kick back, have a nice, decent cup of coffee, and take your time. You know, there's no rush.
And they give you a drink, either a Bloody Mary or a mimosa, with your entree.
Or in my case, a Shirley Temple. Yeah.
And that's a really eclectic group of people. You have people coming after church. You have people who were hungover and show up at noon and they want to watch the game on TV. But my favorite thing there is the chicken confit hash. It is so good. That chicken is just as moist as can be, and there's just a ton of it on top of the potato hash.
I you second that.
Officially just made me hungry.
Yeah, it's really, really good. And you know, brunch is a very... I think, Charles, you mentioned a very adult meal, or Mary. But there, Westport Cafe and Bar, you'll see people there with their kids sometimes.
But they're well-behaved French
kids. It's very French, yes. It's a very French experience, I think, yes.
Let's talk to Jeff in Kansas City. He called 816-2888. Hi, Jeff.
Hello.
What's your favorite brunch?
I was calling about Ragazza's brunch. I have to say my culinary vision's a little myopic when it comes to their brunch. I prefer and have really only enjoyed the Eggs Benedict, but instead of using the traditional English muffin, they use fried polenta.
So that's like a poached egg and maybe some ham or something and some hollandaise on fried polenta?
Yes. It's not ham. Well, it would be something like prosciutto. They would use something Italian, a very Italian flair.
And where is Ragazza?
Ragazza is just east of Broadway on Westport Road.
Well, thanks for that recommendation. Anyone else have a great place for Eggs Benedict?
Grand Street Cafe has good Eggs Benedict. Actually, very, very good Eggs Benedict. It's a nice brunch. You actually see a lot of kids there. It's, you know, but they're not obnoxious. I don't know if they screen them in advance or what. But Grand Street, like Lydia's, and you two can chime in. There's this new trend in brunches where they're menu brunches, but if you order the brunch, you are also entitled to go to a table that may or may not have cold salads and shrimp and desserts. You know, there's some additional component. And for the people who really want that buffet thing going on, you know? Some people really miss those big buffet brunches.
I love Lydia's Buffet because it's got real vegetables. You've got the Caesar salad. It's just much more interesting than the typical brunch.
Good desserts, too.
Yeah.
The last time I was at Grand Street was with you, Charles, and I feel like I could have just had the buffet or my entree, and it was a little overwhelming to have both the entree and then a buffet full of fruits and salads and desserts and pastries and all of that.
Yeah, it's you know, it's nice to indulge yourself, you know.
The production brunch.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right. Let's talk to Sharon in Kansas City. Hi, Sharon.
Hi. I am a server. My life is in the restaurant industry, and so when I go out, I like to be waited on, so I prefer menu brunch, and I love Cafe Sebastian in the Kemper Museum. I think it's a beautiful venue. Jennifer Maloney is the chef, and she really puts on a great show wherever she, you know, all the time at Sebastian, but the brunch is fantastic.
What do you order?
We usually start with a waffle for an appetizer, so we all get a bite, and then we go into the more savory side of breakfast. It's been a couple of months since I've been there, so I don't have a standby that I go. Everything is good, so I always kind of branch out and see what's on. You know, she has meats and like polentas and a couple of egg dishes usually, and it's just a very good. Very good brunch.
So that's a vote for Cafe Sebastian. Emily.
Something I want to point out about Cafe Sebastian, which some restaurants do. Cafe Sebastian, you can get lunch Tuesday through Saturday and only brunch on Sundays. So when you're looking for a place that gets brunch, some places will serve breakfast or lunch one day or just breakfast. And Cafe Sebastian does brunch on Sundays only.
We should also say that Cafe Sebastian is one of those places, I can think of three or four, that are definitely see and be seen places. You know, not everybody wants to be seen that early, you know, anywhere. But it's very, you always see somebody you know or don't want to know or don't want to see. All of the above at Cafe Sebastian.
So it's a scene.
It's a scene.
It is, although I'm too busy looking at my corned beef hash to pay much attention to anything going on around me.
And the beautiful art, because you are surrounded by beautiful art at Cafe Sebastian.
So since that corned beef hash has come up, hash is like kind of an old school morning thing, and it does seem to be appearing on more and more menus now. Any other places you want to draw our attention to thinking about hash?
There are two others that I really like. At Graham & Dunn, they have they call it their corn pork tenderloin hash, and it's in a spicy tomato sauce. And then they also do one at Rye that's very good, a burn-end hash.
And I really like the hash at Rye, but it's a little too refined for me. It's like cut very neatly and put together very nicely, and I like my hash to be slopped together and greasy.
Well, you know why? Because hash started out as a way to use your leftovers in the morning.
Yes.
You know, it was never supposed to be a refined dish.
So we're hearing Cafe Sebastian and Graham & Dunn for hash and rye, with the caveat that if you like it sloppy, that's not the one for you.
Correct.
Okay, let's talk to Kate in Kansas City. Hi, Kate.
Hi, how are you?
Great, how about you?
Great. I wanted to recommend Sava, the champagne bar in Westport.
What can you recommend there? Tell us all about it.
Yeah, they have an awesome mimosa bar. So it's make your own mimosas with all sorts of juices and syrups. They have a DJ spinning like French pop during the brunch. So it's really fun. This might be a polarizing statement, but they have the best croissants in town. They're so good. And then also like quiche and crepes. It's just everything's amazing.
So that's a recommendation for Sava in Westport. Central Standard's headed to one last break. If there's a brunch you love and you want to make sure it lands on KCUR's annual list of best brunches in Kansas City, there's still time. 816-235-2888. I'm Gina Kaufman. More brunch when we return.
Okay, we're in the final round of brunch talk here on Central Standard. The food critics are in session. They're Charles Ferruza, Mary Block, and Emily Ferris. And I'm Gina Kaufman. Call 816-235-2888 to join the conversation. We were just hearing what one caller thought might be a controversial statement about croissants and brunch. Critics, tell me about croissants and brunch.
Well, they're definitely not necessary to brunch, but they are certainly a nice perk. Having a nice bread item with your brunch.
I feel the same way about bagels. You know, I mean, if they're part of the brunch, great. But I don't care.
Don't even get me started on bagels in Kansas City, Charles. I've had my heart broken recently.
Oh dear.
But I think some sort of bread component, like a warm. I love the Majestic restaurant downtown. Brings out a basket of blueberry muffins, warm blueberry muffins with butter. And I think the croissant, like a muffin or a cornbread or something, is a really nice touch to a brunch because you might wait a while. Brunch is kind of leisurely, and to have some sort of bread item with butter or jam is a really nice touch. And a croissant, if it's delicious and buttery and flaky, is the best, I think.
Okay, that's a strong statement. Let's talk to James in Kansas City, Missouri. Good morning, James.
Hi. I'm going to talk about, you say, tomato and their brunch items on Saturday and Sunday. I'm close enough that I can walk down there twice, so in the morning I start out, they only do it on Saturday, Sunday. They have these lovely pecan cinnamon rolls that are unbelievable. And then when I go back, and they close at 2 on Saturday and Sunday, I have many choices, like a good BLT with their oven-roasted potatoes, which is fine. Sometimes I get the potatoes with their sausage gravy or mushroom gravy on top.
James, I have a question.
Yes.
Do you have any overall feelings about brunch and what's happening with it these days?
I'm glad it's gone away from the ice sculpture and the hotel brunches and the never-ending.
the ice sculpture.
Now, I wish I could comment more about the brunch at the farmhouse, but it's been 2 years, but I remember it was very lovely, and they're at 3rd and Delaware. But another thing I like about brunch items at the tomato, they, like I say, besides their oven-roasted potatoes, sometimes I'll do their oven-baked French toast, and it's just real lovely and done well. But their pecan cinnamon rolls are just to die for. And
thank you, James.
Too. Peace out.
Peace out. Okay, so James had a few things to say there. He likes You Say Tomato, the farmhouse, and he dislikes ice sculptures at brunch.
you could hardly find them anymore. I mean, that used to be sort of the standard for hotel brunches.
Yep.
Back in the days when hotels did brunches. And, you know, because in those days, and I'm talking about the 1970s mostly, brunches were really glamorous and expensive. And, you know, I don't think we're going to ever go back to those days. I think the closest you can find to that sort of over-the-top brunch these days is the Horizons Buffet at the Ameristar Casino.
Ah, yes, casino brunch. Charles, talk about casino brunch.
Well, I tend to find casino buffets mostly to be pretty awful, whether you're going for brunch or any other meal. But the Horizons Buffet at the Ameristar is way over the top. They've got, you know, something for everybody. And, you know, some people miss the days of those buffet brunches because they like the fact that the food didn't have to be quality as long as there was a lot of it. Quantity over quality.
That's and the brunch mantra of the past.
Of the past. And if you want that kind of brunch, and here's the other thing. If you want to eat a lot and not have any of your friends see you, Ameristar. Yeah.
Isn't the point of that brunch, quantity brunch at the casino also, though, that you've lost all your money and you're really depressed and you can feel rich by eating everything you want?
That is part of it. But my advice always is eat brunch first.
And then gamble.
And then go gamble.
We've heard from Laura, who says that Julian has free-flowing booze, mimosa pitchers, a great patio, and you can order from off the menu or a buffet with incredible egg frittata dishes. Frittata, I bring this up because frittata is not a word you see as much as you used to on menus.
It's true.
You're seeing it more and more, but it's sort of like the Sophia Loren version of an omelet.
What do you mean by that?
Well, I mean, it's sort of like an Italian omelet that isn't quite as fancy and isn't as fluffy, I would say.
Well, and I think part of that is the omelet is made in batches. So, or the frittata is made in batches and the omelet is made to order. So frittata is usually made in a cast iron skillet and that's going to serve 8 or 10 people. And so it's made ahead of time and it sits and it can be served at room temperature, whereas an omelet is always made to order and you can get exactly what you want.
And an omelet is always really, really fluffy, or ideally is.
Yeah.
Let's hear from Lorraine in Prairie Village. Hi, Lorraine.
Hi, how are you?
Great. What is your recommendation?
Well, I have to say the Bristol wins hands down, and here are the reasons why. Lobster mac and cheese. There you go. They put it on the buffet.
Those are the reasons?
Well, I'm a seafood fiend because I live in Kansas, you know, so I never get seafood. So they have raw oysters. They have smoked scallops. They have two smoked fish there, a salmon and a trout. So I'm up at the seafood area. They have all your breakfast items. They have an omelet bar. They have a carving station, dessert bar, Bloody Mary bar. And here's two secrets. On Sunday at the Bristol downtown, any bottle of wine under $100 is 50% off. So that's all I need.
Thanks, Lorraine, for that recommendation. She's recommending the Bristol largely because of seafood. Any other seafood fare at brunches? Shrimp and grits, I feel like, is gaining some popularity in town.
Yeah.
Very much
so. I believe, is that on the brunch menu at Bluestem?
It is. And also at Rye, my favorite for that, for brunch is at Webster House. Matthew Arnold does a great shrimp.
Well, he's
and
a
grits.
Southern chef. Yeah,
yeah, he is. And he also has some Mexican dishes. He has migas there, which I love as well.
Mary, what other places made your brunch list that you want to be sure and mention today?
Happy Gillis in Columbus Park. He has breakfast and lunch items on Sunday. And my favorite is he changes up the menu a lot, but he's got this country ham shank with grits. And it's really fun because he's got the corn nuts that we all grew up with that he sprinkles on top, and it adds texture. And it's just kind of a fun little twist. Very frivolous.
So that is
Happy Gillis.
Happy Gillis. And any other final recommendations from you?
We were talking about hash, and I failed to mention the succotash on Holmes, just north of You Say Tomato, where we were talking about earlier. They have a fabulous pork hash, and it's slow roasted for a long time. They use it for the hash on Sundays and then in a Cuban sandwich at lunch.
So that's succotash.
Mm-hmm.
It's another CNB scene brunch spot.
Emily, how about you?
Well, the only one that was on my list that we haven't gotten to yet is Room 39 in Midtown. But I do want to say they do not call it brunch. They call it breakfast, but because they also serve booze, I let it pass as brunch. And they only serve it on Saturdays. They're closed on Sundays. But I haven't been in a while, but I used to always go and get eggs and toast. And it was toast with a fried egg and truffle oil and potatoes. And it's kind of amazing and perfect for a late Saturday morning meal.
And Emily, do you want to tell us about the Majestic too?
The Majestic actually has a really good hash. I forgot about that when we were talking about hash. The Majestic is on Broadway at 9th Street. Very old school. Servers in white shirts and black aprons. And their brunch is always, they have a really good Bloody Mary. Their brunch is very hearty, and they do bring out a nice basket of warm blueberry muffins for you to eat while you wait for your food.
I think it's a great brunch. Yeah. I second that.
Let's hear from TJ in Waldo. Hi, TJ.
Hello, how are you doing?
Great. What is your recommendation?
The classic cookie on Gregory and Warnell.
Why do you recommend the classic cookie?
They have probably one of the best egg benedicts I've ever had.
And is that kind of your dish?
Yeah, pretty much. I go to most places and I'll try that out every time I go somewhere new.
You know, this is funny because we've kind of started and ended today with the Eggs Benedict. We're not done yet, but like we're nearing the end of the hour and the Eggs Benedict is coming up again. Talk to me about what makes a good Eggs Benedict. And is this like a brunch classic?
I would say it's definitely a classic. You've got to have good quality English muffins that have been that are crisp, not anything soggy.
And the egg cannot be overcooked. It has to be a perfectly poached egg. And honestly, I don't order eggs Benedict because I have a really hard time getting a perfectly poached egg anywhere in Kansas City. So if I not anywhere, but if I cut into my egg on my eggs Benedict and it doesn't spill all over my plate, it is no good to me.
Yeah.
I feel that way about chilaquiles, or if you put an egg on top of your enchiladas, it's got to be runny.
Right, exactly.
We've got Alan from Leavenworth on the line. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning.
What can you share with us?
Well, I love Charles and normally totally agree with what he says. I need to take exception about kids at brunch. One of the things my wife and I did with our kids, and by the way, they're now 32 and 30, was take them out for meals at breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And brunch was a special time. It was one of the times that they could be exposed to tastes and a little bit of class that are different than we could feed them at home. And right now, our two sons, frankly, have a better palate than we do, and I credit it partially to taking them out to various venues, various menus, various opportunities to experience what it's like to go out in public and have a meal.
Well, you know, thank you for that comment, Alan. And first of all, I'd like to give Charles a chance to respond, but Emily mentioned a moment ago being with child, and I'll be curious to hear her response as well.
Well, as the caller said, I mean, I personally don't like to be around children at brunch, mostly because I'm usually with someone who is hungover, and you don't want to be hungover or not feeling especially well when there's kids in the room.
Loud noises startle.
Yes, but I will say this. I mean, I agree with you. I mean, my father took all of us out to eat for many meals, mostly dinner, and it's how you learn your restaurant etiquette as a kid. But I will say this, brunch, keep the kids at home.
Okay. Charles isn't budging on this. Emily, does that make you sad? I mean, you've mentioned being a brunch enthusiast.
I think part of the reason you don't take kids to brunch, or that you would think you wouldn't, is because kids wake up at 6 a.m. and they need breakfast. So you feed them their first meal at 6. But by noon,
I think 6 might be optimistic, Emily.
I don't know. Who knows? I'm learning. But, of course, my children are going to be the most perfectly behaved children in the world, and so I will take them to brunch. Ideally, yes, I'd be able to take my kids to a brunch restaurant. They wouldn't be absolute terrors. But we'll see how that goes. We'll take them with Uncle Charles, and he'll keep them in line.
We heard from Kate, who recommends Chazelle. It's a crêperie in an old movie theater. She likes blackberry with coffee, and she likes a citron crepe as well. We haven't talked about much of the sweeter fare for brunch. Any recommendations for the sweet tooth person on a Sunday morning? The French toast, the waffles, the
Blue
pancakes.
Stem does a great French toast, as does Webster House. I think they even have a caramel sauce on one of those.
A caramel sauce?
Yeah.
That's so unusual.
You ask for sweet. That would
be
it.
Yeah. And I mentioned earlier Voltaire does a really nice malted waffle, though they don't always have it on the menu. I don't think – I would not consider crepe – I love crepes, like Nutella crepes or savory crepes.
Go on.
That doesn't really seem like a hearty enough brunch for me. If I'm waiting until noon to eat, that just – I would get a crepe to start and then move on to my brunch.
I agree with that. I think a crepe is nice, but it's just a component of the brunch and not a big part of it, an entree.
Let's very quickly hear from Jacob in Kansas City. Jacob, go fast. I'm sorry to do that to you.
No, it's all right. Speaking of sweet things, though, I wanted to say that the brunch at Julep in Westport, which is actually unfortunately no longer offered, they had a French toast. It was a bourbon French toast that had bourbon in the egg mixture. There was bourbon whipped cream on it, and then there was a bourbon caramel sauce that it was put on top of it, with candied pecans, and one of my favorite French toasts I've ever had.
Are you saying then that Julep no longer offers a Sunday brunch?
They don't offer brunch anymore. They canceled their brunch service because I think no one ever knew about it or came around. I don't know.
Oh, thanks, Jacob. Well, we'll check into whether we'll confirm that and include that information online, but we've got to end today's show. So sorry to end on that sad note. We will, again, we'll look into whether we can verify that. Our time is up for the annual brunch roundup on Central Standard. Every year, we update our list of best brunches in Kansas City. This year's list will be online later today at kcur.org. Mary Block, thanks so much for your great recommendations.
Fun to be here, Gina.
Charles of the Pitch, that's Feruza, of course. I've loved having you here, as always.
Thanks, Gina.
And Emily Ferris, I want to extend a special thanks to you for all of your fabulous contributions to our food shows with a busy schedule and a growing new business, among other things. Emily won't be able to join us as a regular anymore. So on behalf of everyone at KCUR, thank you, Emily. We'll never forget the infamous Spice Challenge.
Aw, thank you, Gina. It's been great.
You can stay in touch with Central Standard through our podcast at kcur.org/centralstandard and follow us on Twitter. We're at @KCURCST. Central Standard is produced by Matthew Long Middleton, Sylvia Maria Gross, and Jen Chen, with lots of help from Andrea Tudhope and Matt Hodapp. Bill Anderson and Hannah Copeland have been on the board for us this week. Our theme music is by Spoonbender Labs. Have a great weekend.